Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish your outdoor wood projects with Cabot Premium Wood Care Products. Australian Timber Oil is an exterior stain that provides maximum penetration, durability, and water repellency, making it ideal for decks, siding, outdoor furniture, and more. Save big money at Menards on Cabot Premium Wood Care Products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. All right, everybody. Well, today we have in the news, bees in the news specifically, episode 14. And I tell you, I'm a little disappointed. I found, I think it was a total of four articles today that I thought were really neat. They had a great title and a good introductory paragraph, and they were from all over the world. One of them was in Texas, one was in Connecticut, there were one that was overseas, and one was somewhere else. And for whatever reason, they force you to create a login and then pay some kind of a membership fee or whatever. And I still think that that's really weird. Like, one of them gave a paragraph and then said, check the paper on next Wednesday to see the whole article or something like that. And I'm like, you want to attract people to your site and they're there, they're ready to read. You have the opportunity to put ads on both sides or wherever you want to put it. And you say, nah, that's okay. We're going to completely deny them and make them pay, a $15 a month membership to read an article. So those four articles didn't make it today. But what I did try to do, as always, I try to find a good balance. I try to make sure that I'm putting things in there that are maybe kind of a little bit lighthearted, kind of fun, happy. Sometimes I mix in a little bit of the tragic, as we've seen in the past couple weeks with some of the Africanized bees and some of the damage they've done to some folks. But I also like to get some scientific articles and stories if I can, because full disclosure, I'm not the most scientific beekeeper out there. I kind of take the general, like, Cro-Magnon approach, like, big hive, put bees in, just keep it simple. I know that there's some really cool scientific things to it, and I know that particularly the areas that I think are really neat is the queen mandibular pheromone and other pheromones, the alarm pheromone, other pheromones that are taking place in the hive to kind of regulate day-to-day activities. I am kind of geeked out about that stuff, but the rest of it, I'm just kind of like, just you see certain things, you react to them. And then the rest of your time is spent trying to prevent, right? You're in either prevent mode or react mode. And the underlying science, while cool and very necessary, my brain just can't process it all anymore. I don't know if it's a product of age or whatever it is. But I still want to make sure that I'm putting that out there, because I do get a lot of scientific type questions. And quite honestly, I always appreciate it because it helps keep me on my game. Okay, well, today, as always, we've got five articles. So I'm going to go ahead and jump in with the more scientifically weighted ones first. And then we'll go on to the next. So these are from nature.com today. Sugar-conditioned honeybees can be biased towards a nectarless, dioecious crop. In the last decades, different strategies have been proposed to cope with increasing demand for pollination services in agricultural settings worldwide, such as preserving areas of semi-natural habitats for enhancing wild pollinator assemblages, managing alternative bee species, or recurring to hand pollination practices. Nevertheless, global food production mostly relies on a single pollinator species, the western honeybee, Apis mellifera. Given the honeybee dominance as managed pollinator in agroecosystems, many efforts have been made to guide them to the target crop. Recently, the targeted pollination strategy has proven to be successful in diverse pollinator-dependent crops such as sunflower, pear, apple, and almond. Briefly, this strategy implies conditioning bees to simple odorant mixtures mimicking the floral scent of the target crop to bias their foraging preferences, with the potentiality to increase yields. So far, this procedure has shown positive results in directing honeybee foragers to flowers offering nectar along with pollen as a reward. However, it remains to be assessed the extent to which this strategy can be implemented with nectarless crop flowers. So this is a very long article with lots of details, numbers, graphs, charts. I think that's pretty cool. I think it's definitely worth checking out if you're more on the scientific side of things. But if not, you're probably going to get bored pretty quick because there's a whole lot of numbers and decimals and things that could scare you away. So anyway, moving on to the next one. Acetylcholine and choline in honeybee, Apis mellifera, worker brood food are seasonal and age dependent. Insects have evolved adaptive strategies over evolutionary timescales, including modifications in behavior, reproduction, and seasonal activities in response to environmental change. Seasonal variations influenced by latitude, temperature, day length, and precipitation bring about periodic changes in floral resources, crucial for most insect species. Honeybee colonies undergo annual cycles involving spring brood rearing, summer growth, and fall resource storage for winter preparation. Foraging on plants, they rely on nectar as energy source and pollen for essential micro and macronutrients. These foragers adjust their choices based on the colony's needs and seasonal micronutrient preferences, exhibiting variations in their microbiome potentially linked to food nutritional quality. Brood area changes may be influenced by nutrient variations in seasonal pollen, potentially including higher levels of amino acids and fatty acids that contribute to gland growth and brood care in spring pollen. Collected pollen is stored in cells and enhanced in stability using worker secretions, potentially increasing its nutritional value. Compared to fresh pollen, the stored pollen has less complex polysaccharides, elevated simple sugars, and altered profiles of amino acids, proteins, and lipids. Nurse bees consume the pollen, stimulating the development and protein content of larval food-related glands, primarily the hypopharyngeal gland and the mandibular gland. Anyway, it's very scientific, it's in the weeds, but if you're into that, it really kind of helps you to kind of peel back the onion a little bit and dive into some of the specifics as to what's causing activity in the hive. There's the dynamic inside the hive is incredible. When you talk about the recognition of what resources are coming in, and then the bee's ability to recognize that there is either a surplus or a deficiency of some sort, and for them to be able to communicate and create reaction from other bees based on their behavior, it's just a really, really cool balance. So definitely, a good article worth checking out if you really like to dive into the weeds. All right, time a little more lighthearted here. This is coming to us from Homer, Alaska. A Homer business takes a local approach to brewing mead with help from thousands of bees. On an early summer morning, amidst the heavy buzz of energetic honeybees, Jason Davis opened one of his hives and pulled out a frame. It was dense with bees, and more crawled in and out of the entrances of colorful stacks of polypropylene boxes that surrounded him. As soon as they start landing, you'll see that they have little bales of yellow or orange pollen on their legs, Davis said. Davis has 25 colonies, over a million bees, in the backyard of his meadery in Homer, Sweet Gale Meadow Works and Cider House. This is a happy day for the bees because it's either above 50 already or it's about to be, and there's almost no wind and it's sunny and the dandelions are out, Davis said. Davis turned around and squatted down in front of a row of low bushes. He's planted rows of negun berries, also called Arctic raspberries. Davis said he discovered negun berries in the wild as a teenager and has had a special connection with them ever since. They look like raspberries but have a distinct tangy flavor that Davis now treasures for making mead. It's hard to get enough from the wild, so I grow them here, Davis said. I have about 20,000 plants, and last year I harvested almost 500 pounds of berries, mainly my son harvested, but I help him when I can. Negun berries, honey, and water are the only ingredients in Davis's most popular drink, a wild fermented mead. Producing locally grown food and drink in Alaska can be challenging, and it's especially true of alcohol, which often relies on imported fruits, grains, and yeasts, even when they're brewed in-state. But since he began commercially producing meads and wines, Davis has pursued making them with all local ingredients. So I know nothing really about the creation of mead and the making of mead from honeybees and their byproducts and everything. I think that's definitely something worth checking out. I haven't had a drink in about 3+ years or whatever it is, so I don't have any interest in it. But I certainly can't blame if you want to have a glass of mead here and there. So kind of a fun little article there. Okay, this one's coming to us out of Broomfield, Colorado. Festival in Broomfield buzzes with honeybees, celebrates local pollinators. The Baseline Community and Broomfield Council of the Arts and Humanities are hosting a celebration of bees and other pollinators with a family-friendly event. The festival will be buzzing with activities for the whole family. The event begins at 10:30 a.m. August 17th and includes aerial performances, gift bags for kids, food trucks, and live music. Additionally, experts from Butterfly Pavilion will be present to answer questions and provide education on the importance of pollinators. The Master Gardeners from Colorado State University's Extension Campus in the county will be available for question and can provide insight into pollinator-friendly gardening. In 2019, the Butterfly Pavilion began creating pollinator districts, areas around the state designed to attract pollinators among human habitats, and the Bug Zoo named the baseline community as the state's first. The idea of a pollinator district is to encourage people to be among nature while gaining an appreciation for the importance of the organisms. Honeybee Day will be hosted at 16555 Shoshone, that's S-H-O-S-H-O-N-E, Street in Broomfield on August 17th and lasts from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. So if you're in the Broomfield area, feel free to check that out. And last on the list for this week, coming to us out of Israel, study finds honeybees need a balanced diet too. Nutritional imbalances affect survival, reproductive success, and offspring health of bees, which in turn impact pollination of our food supply. Turns out it's not just humans who need to watch what they eat. A new study from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem has revealed that a balanced diet is crucial for the health and task performance of honeybees, which play a key role in pollination around the world. The research conducted by Professor Sharoni Shafir and his team at the Robert H. Smith Faculty of Agriculture, Food, and Environment sheds light on how honeybees balance their nutritional intake to maintain homeostasis and enhance fitness. The study's findings indicate that an unbalanced diet with a high omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, 5 to 1, significantly impairs the bee's ability to nurse larvae. Bees fed such a diet showed delays in the onset of nursing behavior, reduced frequency of nursing visits, and altered attention to larvae of different ages. In other words, if bee ladies don't balance out their omega-6s with omega-3s, the baby bees get less attention, which ends up lowering hive health in the long run. To investigate these effects, researchers fed one-day-old adult worker bees either a balanced or unbalanced diet for 7 days. The bees were then released into a common garden hive tagged with barcodes and filmed continuously for 6 days. This is actually kind of cool. There's a picture on the link if you get a chance to check out the article, which all of these are always posted on the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage, N-E-W-B-E-E-S, under In the News. All the articles, past and present, are going to be there, but if you can check that out, they actually have a photo in the article, and all of these bees right around their cleft on the back of their shoulders, they have these little barcodes. It's kind of cool. Analysis revealed that bees on the unbalanced diet exhibited delayed and less efficient nursing behavior, particularly in distinguishing between 3-day-old and 4-day-old larvae. Shafir emphasized the importance of the findings. Balanced nutrition is fundamental for honeybee colonies, impacting not just individual health, but also the overall efficiency and survival of the hive, he said. Our study underscores the importance of maintaining a balanced omega-6 to 3 ratio in the diet of honeybees to ensure they can perform their crucial roles within the colony effectively. And since this article is actually kind of short, I'm going to go ahead and read the last paragraph for you. Significant threat. The research has far-reaching implications, especially for cultivated landscapes where nutritionally balanced pollen sources may be scarce. The trend toward a higher omega-6, omega-3 ratio in these areas could pose a significant threat to bee populations, affecting their health, cognitive abilities, and colony sustainability. The findings align with broader research across species where nutritional imbalances are known to affect survival, reproductive success, and offspring health. The study calls for increased awareness and measure to support the nutritional needs of honeybees. This study opens new avenues for further research linking fitness-related behaviors to nutritional balancing in honeybees, Shafir added. It also highlights the need for conservation efforts to ensure diverse and nutritionally adequate pollen sources are available for these essential pollinators. So the big reason that this article kind of jumped out to me is because we talk a lot about feeding and supplemental feeding, and it's really, really easy to grab a bag of sugar, mix it up with some water, give it to the bees, you know, watch them drink it up like crazy. You see this big explosion of activity in the hive and you're thinking, wow, this is great. I'm doing everything right. And this is why I like to just constantly remind everybody, you know, the two things, the drum that I'm constantly beating is the, you got to treat for varroa. You got to treat for varroa. You got to treat for varroa. Oh, and by the way, have you treated for varroa? And then the other one being nutrition. So if you're feeding sugar syrup, that's fine. Do what you got to do. But always find a way to incorporate some kind of a pollen substitute and something that has all of those essential amino acids so that they're getting the nutrition that they need. I mean, this article is, you know, pretty clearly identifies some of the, you know, the obvious deficiencies that occur when your bees are not getting the appropriate nutrients. So folks, that is all that I've got for you today. Please feel free to check out the YouTube channel. This is the only thing that I'm doing now that is not being kind of simulcast on the YouTube channel. So everything I do there, I'm going to start broadcasting here and vice versa. I think I've got, well, you know, I'll give you guys a little bit of insight here for sticking around to the very end. Just don't tell anybody. Try to keep it between us here. So I've got a video coming. This is no particular order. There is an order to it, but I'm all over the map as usual. If you've known me for more than like a week, you already know that. A video on Africanized bees. There's been a lot of talk about it. I want to make sure we're talking about that. I've got a video coming up about some reasons why people should not keep honeybees. The video is 5 reasons not to keep honeybees. I also have a video that goes over just how expensive it is to become a beekeeper. This is really targeted towards people who are in that first year mode and they're thinking about it maybe next year kind of thing and they're on the fence. I want to go through some of the expenses and just how costly it can be to kind of get things ramped up. There's another thing that's on the list here that I'm not going to tell you about yet because I'm super crazy pumped and excited about it, but I'm not going to bring it up. The time isn't quite right, but it'll be out here in the next couple of weeks. I've got an article about how you're killing your bees, like the top 5 things you're doing today that are killing your bees. I've got a swarm trap video coming. I got Queens 101 and 201 integrated into one video. Got a video coming up on how to handle a dead out and why you need to clean it up quickly. I've got a very funny video that I'm working on that I'm not going to say anything else about, otherwise it'll kind of ruin it. I've got a video on queen introduction, ways, methods, pros and cons to different methods about how you can get queens introduced, whether it's mated queens, laying queens, virgin queens, and all that kind of good stuff. There is another one that I'm kind of on the fence about, so I'm not even going to mention it. And then I've got one about why my late season split or small colony failed, and going to go through in talking about, you know, colony that swarmed and all the things that went down with that, hive beetle, wax moth, why small colonies become victimized and what things are going on at various times of years that causes smaller colonies to fail and what makes it more difficult and makes them more likely to fail as you get into like that late spring, early summer kind of scenario or even midsummer. So everybody, like I said before, that's all I got for you today. Take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.